8 a.m. on Friday, September 11th, God forbid, 2020. I'm going to call to order a meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. I'd like to start off this morning with just, let me find my notes here if I may. I guess I'd like to pay respect to a recently deceased, longtime stakeholder, gentleman by the name of Bob Lake. Has been a stakeholder on behalf of the industry he represents, the commercial industry, Willapaw, Grays Harbor, for I remember about 30 years. It might be longer than that. And he's participated with WFW in a number of ways. He's always been very candid, fair, and he always with a smile. And he's been in front of us roughly 30 times that I can remember. And he's a good man, and he's going to be missed. So, Bob, good fishing, and may you rest in peace.
Larry, do you know,
yeah.
I didn't know he was ill. Was this sudden, or?
He'd been ill for a year or so, and I don't know the specifics of it, but he was a real gentleman.
I second all your words. He was a great guy.
Let's see. First thing is I'm going to make an announcement. There will be no land transactions for approval. Item number four is struck from today's agenda. We are now on commissioner discussion, and Commissioner McIsaac, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe just a couple of words here to try to kick the meeting off in a very positive manner. We've got so many negative things out there with regard to fires and all the rest. There's something very interesting and very positive happening in the world of fish watchers. So in the past, we've heard from Commissioner Thorburn about some bird watching, but there's an interesting thing as some of us fish watchers have been seeing that I'm gonna try to share the screen here and show something real interesting here that's happening at Bonneville Dam that no one expected, at least that I know of. If I can get this onto the full screen situation. So this is a graph of coho jacks at Bonneville Dam, and you'll see the blue line down below is last year, and the black line is the 10-year average, and this is coho jacks. The red line here is this year's returns, and they've had to adjust the y-axis twice now to get them on there, and so they're just, you know, off the charts, so to speak, bigger than the 10-year average. These are fish that are above Bonneville Dam, and so the coho went extinct above Bonneville Dam. Bonneville Dam was built in 1938, McNary in 53, the Dalles in 1958, John Day closed off in 1972. There are a couple of hatchery programs at Little White Salmon and Klickitat, but now there's been some reintroductions. We heard that really nice positive presentation from the Yakima folks on the Yakima River reintroductions. And so here we go with counts that are so started off very much higher than either last year or the 10-year average, and then got up into these stratospheric categories. And it's just an amazing thing that's going on. Now, the Bonneville Dam counts of coho are only a small portion of the whole batch in the Columbia River, but it's just a very positive story. These fish went out during the COVID pandemic. So these were smolts back in May and June, and went out to the ocean. We're only in the ocean for the summer. Now here in September, they're coming back as 17, 18, 21 inch jacks. And so something has gone very well for them. I know that we started this flex spill, more water being spilled over the dams and in a strategic manner. Maybe that's it. The ocean must be good if we're going to see a response like this. But anyway, sometimes you see unexpected positive things. And for those fish watchers of us that keep an eye on weird things like this, I just wanted to pass that on to the full commission. Now, this shows the count of 2 days ago. Yesterday's count came down to around 700 and something, but up here in this way out of sight zone, something very positive. And that limits my 3 minutes now, Mr. Chairman. Is that right?
Thank you for that, Don. I think one comment, that's great news. The for the folks that aren't totally familiar with the life cycle of salmon as you are, the coho do spend 1 year in freshwater before they go out migrate to the ocean. Am I correct with that? I believe I am.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
And so they eventually...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. That's fine.
I was going to say, and they all come back as three-year-olds, so this is a strong indicator. The jack-adult relationship is used in the forecast. We don't use environmental predictors in the ocean to actually make the forecast, and I can't remember if it's 15 to 1 is the normal jack-to-adult ratio or something, but anyway, for the above Bonneville segment, until this is verified with big hatchery returns of jacks down below, which I'm hearing some rumors that that's happening too. That'd be nice if it did. We'll just have to wait and see, but it's kind of an amazing thing right now.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. That's good. That's good news. Any other commissioner discussion this morning? If not, I do have a brief one. Back on the 3rd of this month, as you folks know, Barbara and I from the commission, along with Director Susawind, Kelly Cunningham, and Bill Twite met with the Oregon leadership, including their chair, Mary Wall, and Jill Zarnowitz, one of their commissioners, Kurt Melcher, Chris Kern, and I'm sure I'm missing somebody. We had a very, very good meeting. We had a general discussion at a high level about trying to figure out ways to improve the communication and management of the of both sides of the river. I'll let, if interested, Barbara, would you like to elaborate on that at all? That would be appreciated.
Sure. As someone who has never reached out to any of the other commissions, this was an interesting and a fun meeting with very little in terms of results. We spent quite a bit of time introducing ourselves. We spent then some time getting a very short briefing by the two staff on the status of the Columbia River issue generally. And then the point of the meeting was only to try to determine a process for coming to concurrence on our rules in their case, policies in our case, for the next fishing season and possibly beyond. As usual, the way these meetings went, we had about 5 minutes left in the meeting before to discuss that. So we did not get very far. One of the people suggested that our two commissions just meet en masse, all 15 of us. I had hoped at some point during this meeting over this 3 days to solicit from our commission members if they have ideas for us to use in terms of a process to get to concurrence. But all in all, it was a very nice meeting and as usual, very impressive in terms of staff work. And it was kind of just neat to be able to have a little bit of time to get to know two other commissioners in a different state. So that's all we did.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. Director Susawind, would you like to add anything?
I think you've covered it pretty well. I think the only other element I would add is that the Oregon Commission acknowledged that the Columbia River hasn't really been a priority for them. They've got their rule in place and new commissioners, and but they are now ready to kind of move that around and start working on the policy with Washington.
Thank you, Director. Commissioner McIsaac, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know this came up at our workshop, and there was some concern about the timing of it all and the possible addressing matters of substance. So let me just say that I think this is good news. I think you had indicated that when you get a reach out from the other state to talk about things, you always want to say yes. And the fact that you spent a lot of time getting to know those folks, I think, is a positive thing. You guys had indicated on September 1st staying away from matters of substance, and you did. That's another positive thing. But it's really positive if what you're hearing from them is the intent to move down the road toward discussions of concurrency. That's a very positive thing. So I know there was some concern about all of it, but at least from my perspective, I'm going to say thanks for getting together with them and starting to stay on something that can get positive.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Any other commissioners have any comments to start today? Seeing none. Before I get to minute approval, Nikki, I have a question under number two, open public input. How many people signed up do we have, just so I can be thinking about the timing issue?
I've got roughly 10 that signed up.
Okay. So far. Thank you for that. We'll move now to meeting minute approval. And before we start, I want to thank my colleagues on the Fish Committee, in particular, Commissioner Kehoe, for last minute agreeing to chair the meeting. I had a son with a fever yesterday that I had to tend to. So, Bob, thank you. You want to go ahead and do the minutes, Bob or Don or David on the Fish Committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My pleasure to fill in for you. I believe Commissioner McIsaac was the scribe.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner McIsaac. You gotta unmute yourself, Don.
Hey, Larry. Point of clarification, are we jumping down past regular minutes to approve and then doing committee reports, or are we going to do committee reports first?
We're doing committee reports first.
Okay.
And I don't... Okay, yeah, I do have committee reports first on mine, and then we'll go to the regular meetings.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me go back and find my notes here. Here, there you go. So the Fish Committee did meet yesterday. There were 29 participants, according to the Zoom count. Commissioner Kehoe chaired at your request. As you mentioned, Commissioner Graybill and myself made for the quorum. Non-committee commissioners in attendance included Commissioner Anderson, Linville, and Baker, legal counsel Joe Panesco, and executive assistant Nikki Klopfer were present also. The panelists on the list included our director, Kelly Susselman, Ron Warren, Nate Pamplin, and Chad Herring. And there were several other staff members and members of the public as well to fill out to 29 people. The agenda was published in advance. We took up Pinnipeds first, then Willapa Bay, and then the hatchery policy 3619. On the matter of the Pinniped blue sheet, Commissioner Anderson had put that forward. It's titled Pinniped Conservation and Management Update. His intent, as discussed at the meeting, was to address the pinniped problems in Puget Sound in particular, some sort of a manner with a strategic response in certain areas if possible. And this would involve state, federal, tribal co-managers, and involve non-lethal deterrence, and as well as consideration of lethal possibilities, and in the end, maybe just developing some sort of a Puget Sound Pinniped Management Action Plan. So the discussion moved toward an inaugural briefing on this at some point, maybe at the December meeting. The discussion at the Fish Committee was favorable, and we noted that when we get to future meeting planning under the year at a glance, it'd be appropriate to try to cement something in December, and perhaps Commissioner Anderson can speak more to it when we get to future meeting planning. For the Willapa Bay policy, that's 3622, if I've got my numbers right. The staff has completed the evaluation report and had some public exposure to it. They have noted some minor edits, and we'll be discussing the public comment and our impressions on Saturday, and some discussion about receiving the report and approving the report as a final would be in order on Saturday. There was a touch on a couple of the slides for Saturday, but we were alerted that the whole presentation might be an hour, so we only touched on a few. In terms of our agenda on Saturday, it includes to hear this report and consider next steps. So we alerted the staff that there will be some questions, particularly with regard to more detail on whether the policy met its expectations or not. And then there should be some discussion on the process by which the commission would consider any language revisions or a decision that there should not be any language revisions. Exactly how that process develops, there's something on the year at a glance, but the Fish Committee discussion noted that maybe we ought to take a closer look at that to make it a little more smooth. With regard to hatchery policy 3619, there's public comment coming in. The agenda on Saturday calls for the commission to hear the public comment and think about the public comment in terms of any possible language changes. Some are saying that the public review period was not advertised well and have been asking for more time to comment. And there was a discussion amongst folks about that. There was a discussion about the current process that ends in October, at their October commission meeting, October 23rd, something like that, and does not have an extension on the public comment period. There was discussion about how to make sure that we include the tribal co-managers in before any final decision is made. But there was quite a bit of discussion that maybe on Saturday we ought to focus on the future process and whether or not to grant an additional period of time for public comment and how that meshes in with completing this exercise under all of the current membership on the commission. And so, Mr. Chairman, that's all I've got. I'd open it up to Commissioner Kehoe or Graybill if they'd like to add anything.
Nothing to add. Excellent job as always, Commissioner McIsaac. Thank
you. That's great. That's great, Don. Thank you very much.
Larry, you're muted.
Okay. Okay, what I'd like to do is, in this order, Big Tent Committee, next, Habitat Committee, second, Wildlife Committee, third. Hearing no objection, Commissioner Baker. All right.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. The Big Tent Committee did, in fact, meet yesterday for about an hour. We had all four commissioners on the committee in attendance. That is Commissioner Smith, Thorburn, McIsaac, and myself, in addition to Molly Linville. And I did not write down Commissioner Anderson, but I seem to think he was there. But Commissioner Anderson, please confirm whether or not you attended our meeting. We talked about one thing and one thing only, which is the strategic plan. And we had this, we had a discussion about the plan. We did not go through, we did not preview what the commission entirely will be seeing today or tomorrow. We asked staff to run us through where the plan currently is, the outreach, and we spent a lot of time talking about the outreach that has been done specifically to rural Washington, specifically to Northeast Washington. And then we had a discussion about the values that are embedded in the plan. And then we ended the meeting. So as usual, I like those meetings where commissioners just have a chance to share their views. We all did that. We all look forward to seeing the reaction of the entire commission on the proposed strategic plan. We talked a bit about scheduling. The plan is still on, we still plan to vote on this, whether we should adopt the plan next month. And we will just see what the will of the commission is after staff present the strategic plan to all of us later in this meeting.
Any questions of Commissioner Baker?
Or additions that from other, there were other people at the meeting. If I left anything out, please, please fill it in.
Looks like you did good. There are no hands up. Commissioner Smith, Habitat Committee report, please.
Thank you. Yes, we did meet yesterday at 11 a.m. Full attendance by Commissioners Keough, Baker, Linville. And we had about 10 participants, but the staff was led by Margaret Carlson and Jeff Davis. It was presented a habitat overview of most of the biomes in Washington, of the five biomes. So I won't go into that, but we talked about Puget Sound area and in the shrub habitat. And when we were talking about the shrub habitat, shrub step, we were reminded, rightfully so, by Commissioner Linville about the devastating fires and the, I think what she said, 40% loss of habitat. Molly, you can correct me if that figure, is that right?
No, so the 40% was, we were already down to 40% of the sort of historical shrub step habitat. And then in the last 5 days, we've lost 500,000 acres in the state.
Okay. Yeah, it was that brought a reality check to our entire conversations about everything. But one of the areas that was being covered was in the area of renewable energy in that part of the state. And it was a phrase that Jeff and Margan were using was no regret renewable energy, which meant that, you know, solar farms should not even take away from the limited amount that's left of prime habitat for sage grouse and sharptails. So that we talked about that. And then another positive thing that we were talking about was the need to have the vocabulary of habitat inserted into the other scientific disciplines. Meaning that, and the example of that was that in North of Falcon, it's fish talk without much habitat talk. So Jeff Davis attended to try to be a translator for some of that. So what we want to have happen more is a dialogue across disciplines, which, as we all know in the scientific world, is not the easiest thing to do. But we have to insert habitat in the concerns of habitat into a broader range of disciplines. So it's part of it. It's not a separate thing. It's part of all of what we do. And I'll, that's that. And a lot of that was focused on the co-managers as well, how we can, one area of really finding common ground with our tribal partners is in the area of habitat. So we could use that to build a firmer foundation in other areas. And we lasted about an hour as well. So colleagues, fill in my blanks, please.
Must have done a very good job. Oh, Commissioner Keough, I see your hand up.
Commissioner Smith was a little bit late to the meeting, and so we did start without him. And so he missed a portion of the discussion about the riparian habitat. And we were advised by Megan and Jeff that, you know, right now there is kind of an effort within the governor's office and the legislature to develop a riparian habitat policy. And the director informed us that the department is involved in those conversations and advancing and contributing to those discussions with its expertise and with also kind of priorities that the department has with respect to riparian habitat. And, so there is no, the director informed the commission that right now there's no need for policy guidance for him to continue those conversations. So, just wanted to add that.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Yeah.
Thank you,
Commissioner. A little traffic jam there.
I'll leave that one alone, Brad. Commissioner Thorburn, would you like to do the Wildlife Committee report, please?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'll just start off by making a cross-discipline observation. The District 2 biologist on his private vehicle has a bumper sticker that says, "No habitat, no wildlife." So there is a little cross-discipline thinking here. So we met yesterday at 3. It was a little bit longer than an hour-long meeting. We didn't quite meet the standard of the other committees, but we all had some discussion about it is nice to have hour-long meetings. We had all members of the committee, the commission members of the committee, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Baker, and Mr. Linville, as well as me. We had Eric Gardner and Mick Cope as staff who spoke. Anissa was also there, Kelly Susawin and Amy Windrop for a while, but she had to attend another meeting. And then we had several public in attendance as well. We had one scheduled agenda item. You'll recall at our last commission meeting, we heard testimony from an individual who wants to provide a service of aversion training to dogs with rattlesnakes. And this was initially looked at by he approached the department to get the appropriate permission. It was initially approached through the scientific collection permit. And it does not really fit with the requirements for that kind of permit. That permit is issued for science and education purposes. As the commission asked staff to take a look at this, and a white paper has been developed by wildlife staff and distributed. It identified the scientific collection permit as well as the another kind of permit that the director can issue. The problem there is wildlife cannot be held under that kind of permit for commercial purposes. And this service that this individual wants to provide, he does want to charge for the dog training. While this was being investigated, it came to light that there is another dog training that goes on using porcupines, aversion dog training, sort of the same problems are faced there. So staff specifically looked at rattlesnakes and public holding rattlesnakes and public holding porcupines for dog training. The committee reviewed the information provided and recommends to the full commission that we instruct staff to proceed with looking at rule development in a very limited capacity, specifically for these two species, rattlesnakes and porcupines, do it under the director's permit process. And we acknowledge that it should be, that the commercial use of it should be included under the rules. So that's a recommendation from our committee. And if we can get a nod from the rest of the commission, we'll ask staff to move forward with that rulemaking. Larry, do you want to?
Well, if I may, Commissioner, is there any objection from the commission?
Yeah.
Hearing none, I think you have a wink and a nod.
Okay, and then we also have a standing agenda item of emerging issues, and we had a discussion about the wildfires because a number of our wildlife areas are impacted. We will get a further briefing on this today. The focus in our committee was really to kind of take a look at two impacts. One, threatened and endangered species that are impacted by the extensive wildfires. As Molly noted, the shrub steppe is the ecosystem that's been highly impacted by the wildfires in eastern Washington. It's one of our most fragile ecosystems and in the state because for starters, as she noted, we only have a remaining 40% of the historic shrub steppe left. It's very fragmented. Species that are reliant on shrub steppe, and many of them are actual obligate species, they can't live anywhere else, are often in critical shape in Washington, and this is just adding further stress. So we talked about that. And then the other issue is, as we're all aware, hunting season is opening, and it's early, it's an evolving situation, so we're not really sure what kind of impact the fires are gonna have on the hunting season. And with that, I'll ask if any of the other members of the committee have anything to add.
Any additional comments from the commission? Commissioner Thorburn, thank you very much. A very good report. And now that you're warmed up, we're moving into meeting minute approval. Excuse me, Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, among our very knowledgeable commissioners, about the shrub steppe and the impact by fires. Commissioner Linville mentioned yesterday that this habitat can recover after a fire. Just wondering, and I'm just asking the commissioners that are knowledgeable about this. I mean, what are we looking at in terms of years on this habitat to recover after a fire?
So, Molly, I'll go ahead and start. So a couple of the species that I'm particularly familiar with, of course, are the sage grouse and the sharp-tailed grouse. They have sort of different habitat requirements. One of the issues in shrub steppe fires, and especially the fires that we're seeing now that are so intensive and so hot that they're actually destroying the shrubs. Like many of the arid ecosystems, fire is part of the, historically part of the shrub steppe ecosystem. And the vegetation, it has evolved to withstand historic fires. One of the problems that's going on right now is the quality of the fires has changed, become much hotter, much more extensive, much more intensive, and the shrubs are burned and destroyed. And we're seeing actually areas, I know in southeastern Washington, where the shrubs really have not recovered at all. There is other kind of vegetation, an important component of the vegetation are the bunch grasses. They tend to survive even these hot fires if there's not too much invasive species. And so they will recover. So getting back to the two species I was talking about, they have sort of different requirements. The sharp-tailed grouse live better in the grassier, meadowy type of shrub step. The sage grouse, absolutely essential to have the sagebrush and other shrubby cover. So we're losing, there's a real potential that we're losing sage grouse habitat. And there are other vulnerable species as well that require the sagebrush. So that's a real concern with these newer, hotter, intensive fires, is that it is changing the quality of the shrub steppe. One of the wildlife areas that burned is the one that I work at, and 90% of it burned. It sounds like the sagebrush is pretty much gone. We had a small population of sage grouse there. It was a reintroduced population. It was already in trouble. We're pretty sure that this is the nail in the coffin. The sharp tails, we'll just have to see. So with that, Molly, I know you have more.
Well, that was a really, really good synopsis. To kind of simplify it, your question was sort of how long are we looking at, and the bunch grasses, blue bunch wheat grass, that type of grass, their important sort of growing season is in our wet time of the year, which is sort of February. So they're sort of, it depends on how much precipitation they get, you know, in that really important winter time. And so, because they seed out in the fall, and then you get regrowth in sort of the wintertime, early spring. So, but you're looking at 2 years for the bunch grasses to return. And then, as Kim said, there's sort of three shrubs that we're, you know, sort of looking at mostly, which is several species of sagebrush, bitterbrush, and then rabbit brush. And the rabbit brush will come back pretty quickly in the first 2 years, sort of a seral stage plant. And then, but the bitterbrush and the sagebrush, the various species of sagebrush, you know, you're looking at 4 to 20 years for that to return. For example, on our ranch, it all burned in 2017, and the sagebrush right now is about 2 inches tall, the regrowth. So just to give you kind of